This is Talking Clean with Irene, a podcast for anyone like me who wants to kick the toxins out of their life and live a more natural and sustainable lifestyle. Join me as I unpack how to live toxin-free with insights from scientists, doctors, the creators behind those beautiful organic brands we love, and other experts. I'm your host, Irene Falcone. Well, this week's episode has honestly blown my mind. I have had problems with adrenal fatigue and diet for so many years, and it's just so easy for me to continually fall off the wagon. But I think I have now finally found the holy grail. Today, I'm speaking to Catherine Maslin. She's a naturopath and nutritionist with 13 years experience and the author of the book, Get Well, Stay Well. She's also a mum and the host of her very own podcast, The Shift. She basically confirms what I've always suspected. Our gut health is connected to practically everything. Our stress, our hormones, our fertility, our weight, you name it, the list goes on. So let's get into it. Hi, Catherine. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
You came all the way from Brisbane.
I did.
Welcome to Manly.
It's so beautiful down here.
Isn't it a beautiful day? I would love for everyone to get a feel for what you do before we jump into the podcast.
Sure. So I'm a naturopath. I've been practicing for about 13 years and I have a company called Shift. So at Shift, we help people shift their health and their life. And the primary way that we do that is by inviting them into our membership community where we nurture them and offer them natural therapies to guide them through that process. We have a physical business in Brisbane called Shift at Brisbane Natural Health, where we have a team of acupuncturists, hypnotherapists, naturopaths, nutritionists, you know, the whole complete bundle. And then we also run an online version of Shift as well. So we have memberships called Shift Anywhere, and we have members worldwide that we service through naturopaths. Care using online consultations. When anyone has a problem, I guess in their life in general, but particularly in health, there's a shift that needs to occur, whether it's in mindset, beliefs, habits, physiology, cellular health, there's something that needs to change in order for them to change. And what we do is we provide the framework for them to do it. So rather than looking at it being about the consultation or the herbs or the supplements, it's really about guiding them through the journey. So we work with people for a minimum of 18 weeks and we map out that journey for them. So not only is it about them coming to their appointments and taking their supplements, there's a lot of education involved and there's a lot of hand holding. And I guess the idea is to help people to move through the roadblocks that often would derail them throughout that wellness journey.
That is the story of my life, because, you know, I've just had this like crazy adrenal fatigue for years and years, and I keep trying all these supplements and things work for a little bit, but I fall off the wagon with forgetting to take them, or forget to do my exercise and put my eye mask on and get a good night's sleep. So that sounds fantastic. That actually sounds like something I need to do.
It's so common. I mean, and we all do it. I do it. And I'm a naturopath with 13 years experience. You know, I feel like we all need a bit of support sometimes with this stuff. It's hard to do it on your own.
Can you do a supercharged version so you don't have to wait 18 weeks though? I just want to be well, and I want to shift within 48 hours.
There's a saying that we have, and it's that you're not called a patient for nothing. Oh. And it takes time to heal. Takes time.
Oh, that's my biggest issue. So I have to ask you, you've got a podcast called The Shift Clinic, is that right?
The podcast is called The Shift.
The Shift. And in that podcast, you interview gut health experts.
Yeah, so it's a little bit unique. It's actually an audio documentary series podcast. So we have 12 episodes, and over those 12 episodes, we take people on the full journey through gut health. So what I did was I flew around the world and I interviewed 25 of the world leaders in gut and surrounding health. So we have a gastroenterologist, we have a cardiologist, a gynecologist, nutritionists, you know, people on the emotional wellness spectrum of things. And then we put that into the series. So we talk everything from how the digestive system works, to the function of the microbiome, to the latest research, to the dysfunction in the health industry and why we've gotten to this state of health as well. So it's quite comprehensive.
Oh, I love that. So is the series finished or is it still going?
No, it's finished and published. And at the moment we're releasing the expert series, which are the prolonged interviews with each expert.
Oh my goodness, that sounds amazing. I'm going to link that to the show notes. That's a great resource of where to go to get, because there's so much information on gut health now and you just don't know where to get it from. So I have to ask you then, in that series, I just thought it was a regular podcast and I wanted to know, but what did you learn? Like, what are the top three things you've learned from talking to gut health only experts?
So naturopathically, we believe all disease begins in the gut. And when I was looking at season one, I was like, what are we going to do season one on? The gut was just the obvious choice because it's connected to every other system in your body. So when I went, I flew over to the States first and London, did all my interviews there. I knew quite a bit about gut health. You know, I specialize in the area, we do that. But what I learned really astounded me. And I guess one of the big things is that I know that the gut is connected to everything, but the research is showing it is literally connected to everything. So if you look up any chronic health condition and microbiome, you're going to find research in that area. So we now know that gut health is one of the biggest determining factors of whether you will develop a disease or not. And it's really interesting because there's a big focus on DNA and genetics, and certainly that plays a role. But what we now know is that your gut microbiome actually will determine if your body is going to express these unhealthy genes or not. So just because you might have heaps of family members with breast cancer, it doesn't necessarily mean you need to go down that trajectory. And certainly diet, lifestyle, all of those things we know have a role, but the gut is really up there and it's something we need to be looking at.
When did we all realise that the gut was connected to everything? Is that only in the last couple of years someone decided, oh, hang on, no, it's all connected to the gut now?
So Hippocrates, who's the father of medicine, he said all disease begins in the gut. So it's not a new term. And naturopathically, we were taught about the microbiome, you know, 15 years ago when I was studying. So this isn't a new concept, but mainstream is now beginning to pick it up. And this is why we're seeing more and more media publicity about your gut health and the microbes and all of that stuff coming out. So it is something that's been known by a lot of people for a long time, but information takes a long time to translate. Like, we know that it takes about 15 to 17 years for new translational research to actually make it into your doctor's office. And this is what we're seeing now. Most doctors have an awareness around probiotics enough that they'll tell a patient to take a probiotic if they're having antibiotics. But it's really now beginning to come to the forefront.
It's so much more than just having kombucha and taking pre and probiotics, isn't it?
It's huge. I mean, and your gut is a complex system. Starting with your mouth, you have your stomach, the small intestine, the pancreas, the liver. There's all of these organs that are involved. And when one problem happens in one area of the gut, it affects the next. So you might not chew your food properly, which means then it sits in your stomach, which means then it gets into the intestine and it's not digested properly, which means then it causes inflammation and issues down the line. So this is where people do often mistake stuff with gut and think, oh, well, I'll just have some yogurt or have some kombucha and I'll be fine. But because the dysfunction can be quite deep, it can take a little bit more than that.
So what do we do then? Like, how do we know if our gut is healthy? Do you get tested for that?
So I think the first thing is to know what a healthy digestive system should look like. And I think people have digestive problems for so long that they really just take it as normal to be bloated or to have a regular bowel movement. So a healthy functioning digestive system, you shouldn't really feel it or notice what's going on. So you shouldn't have bloating, indigestion. You shouldn't feel this excessive fullness or any discomfort after a meal. And the other thing is, you should be passing about 2 bowel movements every day. Okay, so 2 bowel movements, and they should be formed like a log, so not too hard and pellety, not too loose and ruddy, and you should feel good after you pass a bowel movement. So what I ask my patients is, do you feel empty afterwards? Do you feel like it's complete? And if that's happening every day, it's a good indicator of your gut health, but also general health. And I think we're taught not to talk about poo. And I see I can talk really freely because I talk about it every single day. but we're taught not to look at this stuff. You know, sometimes I'll ask my patients, you know, tell me, what does your bowel movement look like? They're like, oh, I don't look at that. But you have to. It's really important. So if you know that that's normal and anything that falls outside of that, then you want to be thinking, okay, what kind of investigations do I need to do for this? I guess the first one to do is look at, is it my diet? You know, our obviously the food that we eat is going to be the thing that impacts our digestive system the most. So are there foods that I'm eating that might be causing issues? I would recommend anyone that has bloating to eliminate wheat and dairy for their diet for 2 weeks and see how they feel. 9 out of 10 times that will help. And then if that doesn't work, you want to be thinking, okay, well, what else is going on in the background? And for that, I would recommend checking in with a good naturopath that knows about the gut. Potentially, you might go down the route of testing. You can do microbiome testing. You can do testing that shows you how the function of the pancreas is working, if you have enough enzymes, if there's any inflammation in the gut, how the immunity of the gut is working. So there's a lot of this testing that we have available to us now. And it's not cheap, but in my experience, it can be really valuable to get to the bottom of things.
Wow. And is there a link between gut health and hormones? And is there a link between gut health and fertility then? Because you work with women trying to get pregnant as well in your practice?
100%.
Is that also linked to the gut?
It is.
Oh my goodness. So tell me about that.
So you wouldn't think so, would you? Because you'd think they're two separated, isolated systems. But there's a few examples of this. Your microbiome is made up of 2 to 3 kilos of bacteria, yeast, viruses, and archaea. Okay. So, but let's talk about the bacteria and yeast, because that's, I guess, the bulk of it and what we know the most about. So it's in this delicate balance and it has all kinds of functions. So anything from producing certain vitamins, it produces neurotransmitters, but your microbiome also metabolizes estrogen. So you have a thing called the estrobilome, okay, which is like the estrogen metabolizing part of the microbiome. So if you have what we call a dysbiotic microbiome, which means that the bacteria is out of balance, so too much of one, not enough of the other, just not in the right healthy balance for you, it means it can actually impact your estrogen metabolism. So what I find also is so common endometriosis patients to have a history of constipation. So if you're constipated, it means you're not eliminating, right? And when you're not eliminating, your body will to a certain extent recycle the stuff that it's trying to eliminate. It's very good at recycling and reabsorbing those hormones. So what you can end up with is a woman who has chronic constipation. She's not passing bowel movements regularly and her estrogen levels become high. That can then lead to estrogen-dependent conditions like endometriosis. So there's a huge link with that.
So if people are concerned about that and are thinking, okay, so how about women that are thinking, I'm trying to get pregnant and I can't get pregnant and I don't want to go down any sort of medical, get too serious just yet. Do they ask a naturopath to look at their gut health in relation to their hormones? Is there tests you can do?
Yeah, definitely. And what we'd want to be looking at is the whole picture. You know, if someone's suffering from infertility or even if they just want to make a healthy baby and they're preparing and going into that preconception phase, which is ideal, we want to be looking at the health of the whole body. So how do we balance hormones? How do we support the gut function? How do we make sure the liver's functioning properly? So seeing a naturopath certainly will help with that.
Do we all need to do a test? Because I know I should probably get some tests done, but I don't. I'll just go and start taking different supplements and self-diagnosing.
So what you want to be thinking about is your history. So what we ask our patients at Shift is, how many courses of antibiotics do you think you've had throughout your life? And it can be a difficult thing to remember. So then deeper questions that I might ask to investigate that would be, when you were a child, were you sick? Did you have ear infections or tonsillitis or anything that would warrant recurrent use of antibiotics? Did you have urinary tract infections? And this is a really big one for women, especially having recurrent UTIs, which then lead to antibiotics after antibiotics. Have you had major surgery or an accident? Because when we are under the knife, we get given prophylactic antibiotics. Have you had any major dental work? Because that's going to involve antibiotics as well. So once you start digging a little bit, you can kind of look at the trail and see where has that come from. The other thing that's really important to think about is, were you born cesarean section or naturally? Because that's going to impact the microbiome. Were you breastfed? Because in breast milk, there are microbes and also prebiotics. So food for the microbes and food for the baby. It's quite astonishing. So if you look at somebody's history, you'll know, are they at a higher risk of dysbiosis and is their microbiome likely to be damaged? And then you might go down the testing route. But if all of that's looking okay, you might just want to look into the gut health stuff and what to do and just go for it. Eliminating wheat, eliminating dairy, cutting back on sugar as well, because sugar's going to feed up the yeast in your gut and cause dysbiosis.
That's my biggest
problem.
Yeah, I've gone vegan in the last month and I also don't do gluten either, but I can't give up the sugar.
It's a tough one. And, you know, I was there a couple of weeks ago. I went the other way and I've been doing a ketogenic diet, so the opposite of vegan probably, just for a couple of weeks for a reset, because I just found, and it was mostly natural sugars, but I just found I just couldn't break the sugar habit and I felt like I had to do something a little bit more extreme. And I've been doing that for 2 weeks now. I don't intend to continue long term.
What's keto? Is that when you take lots of sugar?
No.
Because I want that. How do I get into this diet?
A ketogenic diet is low carb, very low carb.
Oh, no.
So you can't have fruit, certain root vegetables you wouldn't eat. So you're trying to be a very low carbohydrate diet. It would be lots of fats, at both animal fats, but also olive oil, avocado, etc., proteins and, you know, a few vegetables.
Is there any supplements that we can take to help us curb our sugar craving then?
So sugar's an interesting one because it's a bit like cocaine. literally. Yeah. It sets off the same pleasure centers in the brain as cocaine. So it is highly addictive. Have you watched that the Sugar movie?
No, because I don't want to watch it. I don't want to. Will that help me quit?
It's interesting because people often ask me questions as a nutritionist friend. Oh, do you think that this is good? I'm like, don't ask questions if you don't want the answer. So sometimes it's better not to.
Well, I watched The Game Changers and then that helped me go vegan, which is great. So that worked. Oh, I just don't think I can do it with it. Okay, so tell me about this cocaine sugar addiction thing.
So if we think of it as an addiction, we need to treat it like an addiction. And acknowledge that it's going to be hard. And one of the biggest things with sugar is that not only do you have the brain chemicals that are telling you to have the sugar, but when you have lots of sugar, lots of carbohydrates, you end up with high blood sugar levels and not quite an insulin resistance, but a picture where we have a blood sugar dysregulation. So what this means is that the pancreas is working really hard, the sugar levels in the blood are too high, and it's almost like your body ends up craving the sugar because of it. So sugar cravings is one of the signs of insulin resistance, blood sugar dysregulation. Other signs that you might be on that spectrum are being thirsty or having a dry mouth, urinating frequently, you know, or waking up during the night to go to the bathroom is a really big one as well.
Well, so, I do that. So tell me about that. What have I got?
So blood sugar dysregulation.
Is that also because every time I have a meal, I have to have something sweet afterwards?
Yeah, so it's blood sugar.
I've got that, don't I?
Yeah, and there's several supplements that can help with
that. Okay, what are they?
So chromium is the biggest one, I guess. There's a herb called gymnema that we prescribe in the clinic. And gymnema is a herb that works by supporting the pancreatic function, and it's really great for sugar cravings. And in fact, if you drink it or as a tea or you have contact with your tongue, it actually kills the sweet kind of tasting taste buds. So you could have it and then actually have something sweet and it wouldn't taste as sweet.
Well, that doesn't sound very fun. That sounds like those – is it – something you take and it makes cigarettes taste really bad, isn't it? I don't know. I've never smoked, but
something like that. But I think, Irene, maybe the biggest thing is it's the mindset. You know, it's looking at why, okay, if I need the sugar, because it's where this addiction comes in, it's like, why do I need that? You know, is it that I'm not finding pleasure in other areas, you know, or is it just a pure straight up addiction that you need to go cold turkey for a few days and then you'll be okay?
Oh, I've tried so much with brown rice syrup. And it's a little bit like takes the edge off, but it doesn't quite get me there.
Yeah, because it's not setting off the same pleasure centres. That's
why. Right. Wow. Yep. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with any of the products that we sell at Nourish Life. Is there anything that I have that you think, oh, that's a really great thing that people should start on a gut health journey, like the Love Your Gut powder, which is the Diametaceous Earth? Do you have a view on those?
Or is that Lee Holmes?
Lee Holmes, yeah.
So Lee Holmes is one of the experts on the shift.
Oh, great.
So
okay.
Absolutely, yeah, that powder's beautiful.
Okay.
I think it's a really good product and she's wonderful as well.
And how about the Beauty Chef products? Are you a fan of those as well, the Carla Oates?
I haven't looked into them recently. Okay. Yeah, but from what I remember, they're quite clean.
Okay.
And good. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think Lee and Carla Oates sort of came onto the market, you know, 10 years ago, and that was just them. But now every man and their dog is bringing out a prebiotic beauty powder, and it gets, I think, really confusing.
Yeah, and prebiotics are the big thing, which I think is great. I think there's been this overemphasis on probiotics, fermented food, and not really thinking about, well, how do we feed our own microbes?
Can you explain in nice, easy terms the difference between prebiotic and probiotics and what the benefits are of both?
A probiotic contains the bacteria, so it's going to have lactobacillus or bifido or, you know, one of those strains. A prebiotic is the fibre that they eat. So if we just take a probiotic, we're getting these bacteria in there which might be having certain actions. But if we take a prebiotic, which is normally fibre-based, what that means is that we're going to give it the food to thrive and replicate. So your microbes are constantly replicating, thriving. In fact, 50% of your bowel movement is bacteria. Okay, so if we feed it the right things, it means that naturally our microbiome can recover. And by fibres, it can be something like slippery elm, which is in the Love Your Guts powder. It can be the fibre that we have in food, you know, fruit, veggies and their peels and skins, whole grains, nuts and seeds, legumes are a really important source of fibre, I think, as well. And then from a supplement perspective, there's all kinds. So in the clinic, we use a lot of partially hydrolyzed guar gum, PHGG, which is becoming a lot more popular now because it's really beneficial for building up your bifido colonies, particularly. We use fructooligosaccharides, we use inulin. So there's all different fibres depending on what you're trying to get done. And I think that the key is to not just stick to one, to really, you know, try and get a big variety of different fibres through the diet.
So you need to have both pre and probiotics. You can't just have one or the other, can you?
You can, and they're both going to have benefits, but if you take both, you're going to have double the effect.
Okay. Yeah. And can I just ask you a question then about kombucha? Kombucha is fantastic. It tastes like a sweet, sugary.
Here we go again.
A sugary drink, but, you know, it's nicer than just water, and it'll be healthy. Okay. So then I realized I was getting really bloated, right? So we had a massive delivery, actually, of kombucha to the office. So I had one every day.
Just like 24 cartons or something.
Something like that. I think it might have been a couple of pallets. And, anyway, I was really bloated. And then I read that actually, unless your gut is in the best possible optimal health, it's actually not very good to have kombucha. Is that true?
The problem with kombucha is it's very high in sugar.
So it starts with sugar, but doesn't the sugar go away? How does that work?
If you make kombucha at home, yes, it's much lower sugar than the ones in the shop. And if you make it at home, it's also very difficult to get it as fizzy. So it's quite a different process. But the standard kombucha that you get really has quite a bit of sugar. And part of the problem is people are drinking too much. So in a can, like a bottle, a 300ml bottle of kombucha, you could have 4 doses out of that and have that over 4 days. So a little bit like that is actually totally fine. But I think people drink it like soft drinks.
Yeah.
So we end up drinking half a bottle or a bottle.
I drank the whole bottle. And then I had another one in the afternoon. Yeah. I think I was doing 2 a day.
And it's better than Coca-Cola.
Okay,
right?
But so I never drank Coke anyway, though.
If that's what people are doing and that's the level. But if you're trying to be really healthy and you're doing it because you want to up level with that, then it's probably not the best thing to be having every day in large amounts. And particularly if you're prone to fungal things like thrush or tinea or patchiness in your skin or things like that, then kombucha probably isn't the best probiotic option.
Wow. What is the best probiotic option then? Is it like a Inner Health Plus or one of those?
So food-based, I think, is best. Probiotics are very expensive. And it's really interesting because, as I was saying earlier, like a lot of doctors or pharmacists or whoever, like, oh, just take a probiotic. But it's very important that you understand that each probiotic strain works really, really differently. So I'll give you the analogy that, let's say that Lactobacillus rhamnosus is dogs, okay? And Lactobacillus acidophilus is cats. So if you can imagine dogs, you've got huskies, you've got chihuahuas and everything in between, you're not going to use a chihuahua to pull a sled, right? And you're not going to have a husky, you know, in your handbag. And this is what probiotic strains are like. So Lactobacillus rhamnosus, there's a strain called LGG, which is studied quite well for things like allergies and also for gut restoration. So I would choose that if my patient had more hay fever, allergic symptoms, etc. If a patient had an autoimmune disease, there'd be a specific strain that we would choose. If they had IBS, there would be a specific strain that we can choose. So you have to do a little bit of research to find out or talk to a good naturopath. But this is where it's really important to understand that you don't want to be pouring money into things without knowing exactly how they're working. So food-based is going to be better. And what I recommend people is to eat a variety of probiotic foods. So if you have some fermented vegetables in your fridge at all times, it's a great place to start. So things like sauerkraut or kimchi, or there's a whole range of them that you can buy now. There's so many brands, and even in the supermarket, I think that they're selling the ones. And you need to get them from the fridge, not off the shelf. That's really important, so they're alive. You might get miso paste, which can be made from soybeans or sometimes other legumes.
Does that come alive once you mix it with the water?
No, it's already alive.
Oh,
yeah. There's bacteria in there.
Oh, already. Okay.
Yeah.
In the packet.
Yeah, in the packet.
Oh, wow. Because that's not in the fridge.
No. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And then yogurt, of course, and being careful for dairy if you feel like you're a bit bloated or might have an issue with dairy.
How about coconut yogurt?
Yep.
Okay.
100%. You can use coconut yogurt. So there's a wide variety of things. And I recommend people try and eat 2 different probiotic foods every day. So that might be a couple of tablespoons of yogurt and a tablespoon of sauerkraut. And these are meant to be used like condiments. So you don't need to eat a whole bowl of yogurt to get that result. You just need little bits often.
If you're really tired all the time, what are the 2 strains or what are 2 foods that you can have with probiotics in it that might be pulling the tired sled?
So it's about giving up sugar. probably is what's making you tired. Which is also,
really? Because yeah. I feel really energetic after I've had it.
Yeah, right. So what happens when we have sugar or white things, so white bread, crackers, you know, refined carbohydrates, is we get a spike in blood sugar. It comes into the bloodstream really quickly, boom. But then as a result of that, it peaks and then it drops really, really quickly. So the difference between doing that and, say, for instance, having a low carbohydrate meal, a complex carbohydrate meal, which might be things like brown rice or legumes, etc., is that sugar is going to be released into the blood slowly, steadily, and then it's going to drop off slowly and steadily. So it's those peaks and troughs that cause the blood sugar dysregulation we were talking about earlier, and then the tiredness from that. So it's almost like a reflex.
Yeah, because I actually tried to do an experiment. I'm going to call it I tried to do an experiment, but actually everything was closed and I was really hungry. You know what I had? I had French fries at McDonald's.
Yeah.
And I felt fantastic afterwards. And then I can't even begin to tell you how crap I felt about it 2 hours later. I felt awful. And I thought, I wonder if that's totally connected, isn't it?
And it's total chemical as well.
Can you talk me through that chemistry?
So things like French fries, corn chips, like they're scientifically made to hit a bliss point. So you can Google this, bliss point food chemistry. Like there's a whole lab in these companies. And the bliss point is designed to provide the perfect blend of crunch, oils, carbohydrate to give you that high, right, to activate those pleasure centers. So often we eat these foods and they're moorish, right? It's like you can't put down Doritos after three. Like you just keep going and going. And the reason for that is it's hitting all those pleasure centers. So we just need to be aware of this. It's once you have an awareness of what is being done to you, you can then go, oh, hold on a minute. Like I can make a choice around that. But that's maybe why it's setting off those pleasure centers, but then you get the low afterwards.
Do you know what's freaking me out about that so much is that I've been trying to be really healthy lately and I'll have a really good salad. In fact, I spoke to a nutritionist and she said for lunch at the office, she said have a salad, like a mixed salad that you can grab from Coles and then add some chickpeas to it and what. It was just such a great idea for a salad. So I've been doing that, but do you know what I do? I add Doritos to it. Why do I have to feel like I need to add Doritos to my salad? Is that a... How do I fix that brain thing?
It's the crunch. So you're looking for the crunch.
Is that what it is?
So maybe some bikinis might be good in there. Buckwheat that's been activated and dried out, which has got like a crunch.
Oh, yes.
Or maybe some oven roasted pepitas or sunflower seeds, you know, that with tamari.
How about the chickpeas that you can get that are dried?
Yes.
And okay, so instead of the canned chickpeas, I can put those in.
Yeah, it's a bit like, you know, when you get a poke bowl and they have like the crunch.
Yes.
Bits? Yeah, I think that's maybe what you're going
for. I love
a
poke bowl. I have a poke bowl addiction then.
Yeah. So there's nothing wrong with that.
Okay, good. I've just got to cut down on the sugar.
Yes.
And so we talked a lot about our own bodies and gut health and fertility. How about menopause and gut health? Is there a connection between those two things as well?
I'm going to say probably. And that's just because of the hormonal metabolism.
So you can't stop it. But could you ease the symptoms of perimenopause and menopause by a different gut health regime?
I'll give you a bit of context on what I'm about to say. So when we're approaching something naturopathically, we look at treating things from two ways. We call it a top-down and a bottom-up approach. So what that means is that, say, for instance, with menopause, so if they're getting hot flushes or depression or vaginal dryness or all those things that come from that, that's happening often because of an adrenal problem. So sometimes it's not even to do with estrogen, but sometimes it can be because of the decline in estrogen. So what we want to have a look at is those things, and that's what's called a top-down approach. That's the problems that are happening right now. The gut stuff we would call a bottom-up. So it's a causative problem, but it's not going to fix the problem if we only treat the gut because the symptoms are caused by something else. So when we're looking at treating any health condition, we want to look at those causative things like treating the gut, environmental toxicity, all of that. But we also need to treat the kind of storm that's happening. And I think menopause needs to be talked about more for young women, especially. Like we need to prepare ourselves. And when I say prepare ourselves, we need to know that menopause is not a disease. It's a natural process that we go through. And I think it's like this dirty word. You know, in Japan, they don't even have a word for menopause in the traditional language.
Wow.
So it's something that if we're healthy, we should actually transition through with grace. And it's a very important time of our lives, hormonally and health-wise, because once we go through menopause, women are much more likely to get cardiovascular disease, diabetes, dementia, Alzheimer's, and also mood disorders too. So we need to really look after ourselves leading into this time. And the best way to do that is to begin to look at our hormones happens now, you know, when we're younger and when we're in those menstruating years. So something as simple as having an irregular period might not seem like a big deal if you're not trying to have babies, but it actually has an impact across the system, and it's something that you need to have a look at.
And to fixing gut health first can lead to fixing all of those other issues.
That's right. And it's we're complex, of course. You know, the human is whole. So often it's pretty rare someone would have isolated gut issues. And I guess a really good example of that is looking at the gut-brain connection. You know, a lot of people outside of the dietary stuff, the second biggest cause of gut problems is stress and emotions. And a good analogy for that is when we're nervous, where do we feel it? Right in our tummy. So when we're stressed and emotional or have anxiety, literally the little pumps that produce acid in your stomach will stop producing acid. So there's a process of stress that actually pulls us out of what we call rest and digest, which is the opposite of that. And it's really important to acknowledge that if you're trying to treat any type of health condition, and especially with the gut, you have to address the stress and emotions, because otherwise it's like you're constantly pouring fuel on
fire. If you fix that though, I think that's where I got my sugar addiction and my coffee addiction through, you know, the first 5 or 6 years in business, where I was like chronically stressed. Can you go back and fix those years?
Of course. Yeah. You know, the body has an amazing capacity to heal itself. Your body is constantly trying to heal itself. Unfortunately, what we do, and I've got my hand up here, it's me too, is that we push it. You know, we run the business, we do the stress, we have the babies, we don't eat right, we stay up too late, we do all the things that we shouldn't, and we do them just a little bit too often until those little whispers that your body gives you, which are your early symptoms, so we might be a little bit tired or a little bit bloated or have a little bit of sleep problems, turn into a scream. And that's when we start getting disease, you know. Signs and symptoms are our body's language telling us that something's wrong. But it has an amazing capacity to heal. And I can tell you, the patients that we've worked with, we've seen some miraculous recoveries. And once you give the body the right environment for healing, and by environment that means the food and fuel that you're feeding it, you know, taking away the toxicity in the environment, in what you're putting on your skin and what you're eating. And I mean, you guys are really big proponents of that. Once you look at the emotions, you know, and the mental side of things, then the body will, in most cases, heal itself, you know. And then, of course, as a naturopath, you know, we want to look at what else can we do to help. And that's where I think natural therapies have a really big role. And herbal medicine particularly is my passion. Herbal medicine is why I became a naturopath. It is an amazing agent for healing the body. And if people don't understand herbal medicine, they need to understand that when you see a doctor, you might be given a drug which has one specific action. Okay, take this drug, it's going to do this one thing. A herb has a complex blend of phytochemicals that does a number of things, you know. So even just from chatting from you today, I'm like, yep, gymnema would be a great herb. Licorice would be great because it's going to restore the adrenal glands.
I'm actually going to do your course. As soon as we finish the podcast, I'm like, I'm totally signing up. Am I a good candidate? Someone that's sort of whispering, my body's whispering, it's tired, I'm not getting enough sleep, I have come out of, you know, getting the business up and running, stress, and I'm sort of getting into that point now where I've got enough people around me now that I can have a little bit of relaxation time. So I'd be a good time now to do the shift course, right?
It would be, you know. And what I would say to that as well is for people, don't wait until the perfect time to look after your health. I know, and there's going to be a time where things slot in, but definitely we work with people like you all the time. And there's patterns that people show up, right? And it's the gut stuff, it's the sugar cravings, it's the feeling overwhelmed, it's the feeling stressed. And it's because we run our lives, you know, often on an oily rag.
Yeah, right.
You know, which works for a while, but then over time we can get a bit fatigued and that type of thing. But for what you've described to me in our little mini podcast consultation.
Yes, thank you. You see what I did there?
Yeah, herbal medicine would be wonderful to help to restore the adrenals, to help to improve sleep, to, you know, stop the waking up during the night to go to the bathroom and the sugar cravings too.
I know, right. I've been taking iron and activated B12. And that's been making me feel amazing. And I've also been having my green powder every single day. That's been huge for me.
And as a vegan too, that's important. You know, you need to look after those factors and really keep an eye on your nutrition.
Yeah. Well, I'm not vegan. I've just been trying for a couple of weeks, seeing how I go.
Yeah, just testing the waters.
Just testing the waters, that's right. For anybody listening who wants to get their health on track, you know, there's so much we can do and there's so many things out there. What do you think might just be a nice general Monday to Friday meal plan? Like, what's a good breakfast, snack, lunch and dinner, and what time? Because there's all this stuff about intermediate fasting, and then there's the keto thing, and then there's the vegan thing. Like, what's just a nice healthy
Yeah, it's challenging because there's no diet that's perfect for everybody. Right, okay. However, okay. Yeah. I feel like there are some universal rules.
Not the French. Can you have French fries at all in any of these, any time of day?
You know, I eat chips, right? Probably not McDonald's because I don't like it. But I eat chips. I eat pizza sometimes, but I don't do it every day. Okay. So what I would encourage people to look at is you don't have to be a purist. And I think people can take it too extreme. You see that all the time. Extreme veganism, I think, can be a form of that sometimes with people, depending on how they're doing it and in what format. But the general rule is whole foods. Okay, no matter what they are. My other rule is gluten-free, just because there's so much evidence now showing us that gluten is associated with all kinds of health conditions, everything from Hashimoto's, other autoimmune conditions, asthma it affects, endometriosis it affects, everything. The other one is just, you know, including mostly vegetables. So whether you're vegan, whether you're paleo, vegetables should be the cornerstone of your diet. 3/4 of your diet should be from vegetables, nuts, seeds, legumes, okay? And in regards to eating times, it's intermittent fasting can be great, but it's not great for everyone. And women, especially if they're in their menstruating years, it can rock them. So there's no perfect diet. But what I would say is your body likes regularity. So if you're going to do intermittent fasting, do it every day. If you're going to do 3 meals a day, do them at around the same time every day. So don't have breakfast at 9, lunch at 12 one day, and then 2 p.m. the following day and 11 a.m. the day after that. Your body doesn't like that. It likes rhythm and routine and cycles. So just be aware of that.
And how about for breakfast then? Are you a smoothie girl or are you more of a cereal girl?
I'm very much a smoothie girl, or at least I was before I've been doing this keto diet. But I am a smoothie girl, partly because I love the ease of it. And my daughter loves smoothies as well. And it's an easy way to get in heaps of superfoods. But I love it because you can just pump it up with so much. You can throw some spinach in there. I use bee pollen. I use maca. I use protein powder, and it's just a really nice way to get a boost of nutrition.
Yeah, I've been putting the frozen. So someone I interviewed on the podcast said to try swapping banana out for zucchini. Mm. So I bought some sliced zucchini from the IGA and I had them in the freezer, and my husband has just look on his face. I started putting the zucchini in my smoothie. He's like, what are you doing? Because he's so used to be putting the bananas in. It's really delicious and it must have so many vitamins in a zucchini, right?
Yeah, definitely. And particularly that green skin. So you're going to get that chlorophyll and it's going to be alkalizing. I haven't tried that one.
Okay, there you go. There's a tip then.
Thank you. It was worth coming on this podcast just for that.
Absolutely. Wow. Well, thank you so much. That was so knowledgeable. Your course sounds amazing. I'm going to listen to your podcast series now because that sounds awesome. You've also got a book called Get Well, Stay Well.
Mm-hmm,
where can we buy that?
So if you go to katherinemaslin.com or Amazon, it's available on Amazon in ebook and also print. But if you go to katherinemaslin.com, and if you're in Australia, the postage will be cheaper that way.
That's fantastic. I will link to all of those things in the show notes. That was amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is produced by Nourished Life, Australia's home of toxin-free shopping. To learn more and get all the show notes, visit us at nourishedlife.com.au. If you have any feedback about the show, you can reach me on Facebook or Instagram at Nourished Life, which is all one word. Don't forget to subscribe to Talking Clean with Irene in your podcast app. And finally, if you like what you hear, please give me a 5-star review. It really helps other people to find the show. I'm your host, Irene Falcone, and I'll speak to you next time.